good evening. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington, and this is Crossroads Asia. Tonight on our program, tensions spill over as Chinese relatives of passengers on board the missing Malaysia Airlines jet demand answers. Taiwan protesters occupy the legislature and demand an end to a trade pact with China, and a Vietnamese blogger is jailed for 15 months. It's all ahead on VOA's Crossroads Asia. While a massive search to determine the fate of the missing Malaysia Airlines jet continues, the anxiety and grief of the family members of those on board the plane continues to grow. Frustration over the lack of progress in the search for the jet erupted today at a daily news conference where Chinese relatives of missing passengers confronted Malaysian officials. The families burst into the room where the media briefing was to be held, yelling and holding a banner demanding Malaysia tell the truth about what happened to the plane that has been missing since March 8th. One unidentified woman directed her frustration at a Malaysia Airlines official. She said, every day I'm confronted by your boring questions. I'm facing you every day. I'm fed up with it. I know you know we can do nothing but vent our anger and cry. We can do nothing to you. Aside from lying, deceiving, you have been playing the gangster. Two-thirds of the plane's 227 passengers were Chinese. Many of their families have become increasingly angry about what they feel is contradictory or confusing information released by Malaysia. Some have even threatened a hunger strike. Malaysian security forces forcibly removed the wailing Chinese relatives from the room and blocked the entrance as scores of international and local media recorded the incident. Once the news conference began, Malaysia Defense Minister Hashmuhyiddin Hussein said authorities are trying our very best to locate the plane and to narrow the search area, which now covers more than 7 million square kilometers. The minister who's leading the multinational operation said he understands emotions are high. He said Malaysia is sending another high-level delegation to Beijing to explain more details of the search. Well, as we've heard, the international search involving 26 nations has been widened to cover more than 7 million square kilometers, an area roughly the size of Australia. The territory extends from Central Asia in the north to the vast waters of the Indian Ocean to the south. Authorities believe the jet was deliberately diverted and flown either towards Central Asia or over the Indian Ocean. The Chinese state news agency Xinhua says 9 Chinese vessels, including the country's largest rescue ship, were to set sail today from Singapore to search the waters of the Bay of Bengal and west of Indonesia, an area of 300,000 square kilometers. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman said Tuesday that 21 satellites are also being used in the search and called on Malaysian authorities to provide comprehensive and accurate information regarding the search and to come up with solutions. As we've heard, Malaysian authorities have been under pressure to find answers. Scott Hamilton of the U.S.-based aviation consulting firm Liam & Company was asked by VOA's Victor Beatty how he would describe their handling of the investigation.
I think that they're just totally in over their head. They've probably never had anything even remotely like this to deal with. Didn't know what to do with it, didn't know how to deal with the pressure from the Chinese government, which, of course, was very immense given the number of Chinese on the airplane. You had one agency of the government saying one thing. You had another agency saying something contradictory. I just think they've been totally over their head on this.
Do you think the United States could or should step in?
Well, they certainly could, but by international treaty, under what's called the ICAO, which is an international aviation authority, the government of the home airline, in this case MAS, of course, is in charge of that if the airplane went down in their jurisdiction. So the U.S. cannot step in unless are asked to, and I don't see that particularly happening.
Reuters news agency put out an article called Malaysia Airlines Industry, and the topical sentence reads this way: the global aviation industry is reverberating with shock as well as a range of theories over the fate of the missing Malaysia Airlines jet, but most in the business think the unsolved mystery is more of a tragic red herring than a wake-up call for drastic changes.
Look, after Air France 447, there was some discussion of having real-time data links from the airplanes to the ground so that if an airplane disappeared over the wherever, in that case the Atlantic again, authorities would have a much better idea where the airplane was. I would expect that after this, that call will resurface to have real-time data links that cannot be turned off by the pilots, if indeed that's what happened here. But it's kind of axiomatic in the aviation business that international aviation rules are written in blood because you have to have a whole lot of people die before there's change.
Do you expect this case to be resolved in a matter of days or a couple of weeks, or is this going to drag on for a long time?
Unless there's a major break in the case where debris is sighted, and then they can analyze whatever debris to eliminate things, such as an explosive decompression or that sort of thing, or if there was a fire. Even if they found debris, they would have to backtrack it to the point of origin, and assuming that in a deep part of the ocean, they would have to mount a recovery effort. That could be very lengthy. I think this is going to go on for a long time, and even if they find the airplane, typically, it takes about a year before you have a definitive conclusion to the accident investigation.
Scott Hamilton says it's highly unlikely the plane landed at a clandestine airfield, adding the more likely scenario is that it crashed at sea. James Chen, a Malaysian expert with Australia's Monash University in Kuala Lumpur, tells Victor Beattie Malaysian authorities are trying to handle what has become an increasingly complex international search effort, and they're learning as they go along.
The problem is that Malaysia do not have the sophistication that the Americans have. For example, we do not have a lot of the warships and the planes needed for this sort of search. In fact, as far as I know, we do not have any equipment designed for searching planes in the deep ocean. So I think it's very, very difficult for the Malaysian authorities to deal with this issue.
How are people handling this? Is this the number one topic of discussion in Malaysia?
Yes, one of the cable networks in Kuala Lumpur has been using this as their main lead item for the hourly news for the past entire week. So yes, there is a high level of interest. Part of it has got to do with the fact that this is a very rare event, as I mentioned. The last time that a Malaysian airlines went missing was probably 30 years ago. The second reason is that China is quite important in terms of foreign relations with Malaysia, and more than half of the passengers are actually from China. So they're putting a lot of pressure on the Malaysian government to resolve this issue.
How is this impacting Malaysia's relations with Beijing?
It won't impact the relationship immediately, but I think there will be some long-term consequences, especially if it was found that the plane went down and all the passengers were killed.
What long-term implications might it have?
Some of the Chinese commentators are quite unhappy with the way that the Malaysian authorities has been handling the issue. Basically, it comes down to the issue that the Chinese feel that the Malaysians are not very forthcoming with information. Part of the reason is because the Malaysians do not have any experience with this sort of issue. And also, secondly, the Malaysians are very cautious in giving out information. Almost any information they have, they always want to double-check it. And unfortunately, living in today's age where the social media is present at all times, this sort of luxury, time luxury, does not exist for the Malaysian authorities.
How has this impacted Malaysian Airlines itself and the families of the pilots?
As far as I know, the families of the pilots have left their homes. They're trying to stay away from the reporters. The big issue in Malaysia in regard to the Malaysian Airlines is that people here are worried, especially the government are worried, that this will derail Malaysia's airline turnaround plan. Some of your listeners may know that Malaysian Airlines has been losing billions of ringgit for the past 2 years. And with this incident, it would appear that it would be very hard to turn the airline around.
James Chen says the handling of the missing plane has underscored what he calls the incompetence of the Malaysian bureaucracy, including its inability to communicate internally. He says the case also points out the gaps in civil aviation radar coverage throughout Southeast Asia. Chen says the government's response to Flight 370 may impact Sunday's assembly election in the Kuala Lumpur suburb of Kejang, where the wife of opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim is a candidate. Dr. Wan Aziza, an eye surgeon, replaced her husband after his sodomy conviction was upheld in court. Mark Thompson, director of the Southeast Asia Research Center at the City University of Hong Kong, tells Victor Beatty the search for Flight 370 has found its way into Malaysian politics.
There was some finger-pointing by elements in the government that the pilot was linked to Anwar because he was a supporter of Anwar's opposition party, because he's related to one of Anwar's in-law. It looks like an attempt, obviously, to divert attention from the Malaysian government's own failings in this regard. But it's, I think, revealing of the current state of Malaysian society that basically any issue that comes along gets fed into this deep domestic political divide that was evident in the general election last year, so close and so bitterly contested. And this is just another issue that has fed into that.
This mystery apparently has, according to the wire services, has reached an impasse despite an international effort. Where does this story go now, do you think?
People are realizing that despite our technological sophistication, that if a plane goes off radar, and in this case apparently intentionally, and given you know how far these kind of planes can fly undetected, then it's going to be very hard to search an area that, according to recent reports, is twice the size of the U.S.
It was revealed that Thailand had some radar data that it had withheld from the investigation until just in the past day. This reluctance by some countries in Southeast Asia to share military intelligence apparently points up an issue amidst all the territorial tensions that are going on in that region. What do you make of it?
It points to military mistrust, despite the best efforts of the leaders of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, over the past several decades to develop closer ties, particularly in regards to trade, that in certain realms, sovereignty is still guarded very closely. There's not a real framework for military cooperation. And given the fact there hasn't been something like this before, there's been no real reason to cooperate. I mean, one, of course, hope is that out of this crisis comes a sense that there will be a need for greater cooperation, at least in terms of airline security. So that's, of course, a positive spin one could put on this, that there'll be pressures on the governments of Southeast Asia to work more closely together.
Mark Thompson of the City University of Hong Kong. An interfaith prayer service late Tuesday at a shopping mall on the outskirts of Kuala Lumpur to remember those aboard Flight 370 involving Muslim, Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, and Taoist religious leaders was viewed as a rare sign of unity in the nation of 28 million known for sectarian tensions. This is Crossroads Asia on the Voice of America. Coming up, a Vietnamese blogger is sentenced to prison. In Taiwan, hundreds of protesters have burst into the legislature to demand the government scrap a trade deal with China. The protesters knocked down a large metal gate as they entered the legislative chamber late Tuesday and used chairs to keep out police. They're protesting a trade deal with China they say will endanger Taiwanese jobs and increase Beijing's growing influence. A spokeswoman for the student protesters, Huang Yufen, said her group is upset that a government committee passed a review of the deal despite opposition protests. She said, "We demand Legislative Yuan Chairman Wang Qinping declare directly that the decision made by the Interior Committee yesterday is invalid. And we ask President Ma Ying-jeou to come here to respond to the people's demands in person." Taiwan-China economic ties have been strong for years. Political relations have also grown warmer following historic high-level talks last month. But Taiwan's opposition is worried about excessive Chinese influence. They vowed to vote against the trade deal, but do not have the strength to block it. Chang Qing is a Taiwan-based research fellow at the Society for Strategic Studies. VOA's William Gallo asked him why the opposition opposes the deal.
Well, I would say they have raised a lot of examples, but I would argue, say, many of the people, especially for the general citizen, they are actually misled by the opposing party, because there's no solid evidence to show that this may eventually hurt the interest for specific service sectors, such as the barber shop. You know, they claim that the barber shop will be hurt the most. But there are many service items, you know, even you open to the mainland, there's no mainlander will cross the street and come over to Taiwan and run a barber shop. So actually, there's a lot of false and plausible argument. And to be honest with you, many of the protesters, all the legislators, they have not read the whole text of this agreement at all. Now, this is the typical case in a democratic society. Many people, they only driven by their expression, driven by their political preference, but there is no rational calculation behind this at all. Is there any kind of political calculus behind that? Well, the answer is yes. The Austin Party, they have find a very nice point to attack the Austin Party, and they can eventually win the leverage in the coming election at the end of this year.
Okay, so if I understand you correctly, you're saying that perhaps some of the threats in this agreement are overblown or exaggerated, but there is some legitimate debate over the procedure and of how this was passed, or is going to be passed.
They actually protest a political promise, though. Originally, they promised that they will review the agreement article by article, item by item, clause by clause. But eventually, they find another way to interpret that, since it is an administrative agreement, so they can automatically be passed. Many of the impact to the service sector in Taiwan is overrated and overstated by the opposing party. But that's the reality of life. As an opposing party, you will definitely find some excuse in order to mobilize the public, in order to get the support, in order to get a political leverage. That's something in the reality. It's not a matter who is right or wrong.
Now, do you think there's any chance that Taiwan's opposition can stop this bill? And how will this protest today affect it? Do you think it will be delayed at all?
Well, first, I would say I'm very sorry. We are actually doing a bad example, you know, about a democracy, especially on the other side of the Taiwan Strait. Actually, there are many citizens in the mainland. They will open their eyes to what will be the essence of democracy. For any negative image or negative practice that happened in the legislative union, our parliament, actually, they will bring a negative consequence because we cannot argue that, say, Taiwanese democracy is our asset, you know, and which is, something we can also encourage the people in mainland to they pursue for democracy. Actually, we are doing a bad example. If we can maintain a high-quality democracy, which is that we can argue and we can encourage the people in mainland to pursue for democracy, but we are doing the things oppositely. So I will say there's no way of return. Eventually, it will pass. But according to the process, the KMT did not, follow their of the previous political promise and go through that process. Both sides originally agreed. That's something also a sham. No matter whether it will be legal or not, you know, according to the procedure, actually it's quite legal. But the matter is, though, since originally you have made the political promise, you should follow that promise. Otherwise, everybody can regret from this any negotiation. This is also something very bad to assure the quality of the democracy. And again, there will also be a very bad demonstration to the other side of the Taiwan Strait.
Chang Cheng, a Taiwan-based research fellow at the Society for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA's William Gallo. This is Crossroads Asia on the Voice of America. 62-year-old Pham Viet Dao today became the latest blogger in Vietnam to receive a jail term for criticizing the government, as Hanoi continues an increasing crackdown against online dissidents. Marianne Brown reports from Hanoi.
After a two-hour trial Wednesday at Hanoi People's Court, Phap Viet Dao was sentenced to 15 months in prison for abusing democratic freedoms to infringe the interests of the state under Article 258 of the Penal Code. His blog posts allegedly distorted and vilified senior leaders. Dao was a former official for the Ministry of Culture and long-standing member of the Vietnamese Communist Party. He chose to represent himself in court. On the day of his trial, many activists expressed their support for the blogger on the internet social website Facebook. Among them was 23-year-old Trịnh Kim Thiên, a prominent campaigner against police violence in Vietnam. She posted a photograph of herself with Dao during an anti-China demonstration in 2011. She said Dao wrote on politics and a variety of human rights issues in Vietnam and was very influential. She said he was well known among anti-China protesters because his younger brother was killed during the 1979 border war with China. Anti-China protesters have increasingly used Facebook and blogs to discuss Chinese territorial claims in the South China Sea, which overlap with Vietnam's own claims. The issue is very sensitive for the Vietnamese government, which has strong trade ties with China. Stories on the dispute are censored in official media. Dao was one of three bloggers arrested in mid-2013. Former journalist Chung Zui Nhat was jailed for 2 years earlier this month, and Dick Nhat Huy was given a 15-month suspended sentence. Phil Robertson, the deputy Asia director for the New York-based rights group Human Rights Watch, said the treatment of the blogger was like a processing line.
They've decided they want to run these people in, and they're just lining them up and knocking them down. I mean, they're treating these dissidents like bowling pins.
All three men were charged under Article 258, which Human Rights Watch describes as a vague provision that has routinely been used to imprison people for peaceful criticism of official policies and practices. Robertson says it is a tactic intended to suppress government criticism.
This is all about trying to, you know, essentially smash the communication and information of this group of activists, dissidents, who are continuing to press the government on everything related from land to respecting human rights to corruption.
According to Human Rights Watch, Vietnam convicted and jailed 61 dissidents and activists in 2013, compared to about 40 a year earlier. The Vietnamese government says it only jails people who break the law, and that there are no political prisoners in the country. This is Marianne Brown for VOA News in Hanoi.
Please remember to look at our website. You can get to it at www.voanews.com. We have a whole range of stories that might interest you. Also, if you're one of the many people who's on Facebook these days, take a look at our Facebook page. It is at VOA Asia. Thanks very much for joining us on tonight's Crossroads Asia. I'm Sarah Williams. Please stay tuned for International Edition with Susan Yaki, coming up next.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's premier newsmaker interview program. If you have ideas for guests or topics, or want to comment on one of our programs, please write to us at Press Conference USA, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. That's Press Conference USA, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or if you have access to the internet, send us an email to pcusa@voanews.com.